Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwineetr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwineetr. And now,
All About Wine is on.
Here's Rob.
Thank you.
Yeah, best people.
All right. Welcome to All About Wine on the last show of 2022.
Yeah.
Oh, 2023 turns out to be an even better year than 2022. So, everyone, he's online. We have a guest tonight, Jim Loughran, who has been on before, three times before, I think. And he's starting to become one of our regular guests on the show. We've got three or four of them that's been on two or three times, and Jim is one of them. He is going to come on tonight and talk to us about, well, a whole bunch of stuff, because whenever he gets on the show, that's what we do, talk about a whole bunch of stuff, wine and wine-related stuff. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Ron. Good evening, and happy holidays to you.
And you also. There's a whole bunch of Kwanzaa we just passed, and New Year's, and Christmas,
yeah,
obviously.
And there's
Hanukkah.
Festivus for the rest of us, I
Festivus,
guess.
Festivus, yeah. And so it's the time of year. I was just thinking, why is January 1st picked as the beginning of the year? Why not something like, I don't know, June 1st? It's still going to be a year to go around the calendar to get back to it. And it would be a lot warmer and a lot safer for everybody, since everybody's going to be out, you know, partying and everything, than on January 1st. I don't know. That's a random thought there that I'm wondering about.
I kind of June 14th myself.
That would work too, because it would take a whole year to get back to that. And that would work. Just anything better than the cold and snow and, you know, all the bad weather, because I'm sure that you can attribute some accidents to the bad weather on the first, not just drinking, but just the bad weather. So, yeah, well, maybe we should start petitioning that and see what we can come up with. So how have you been?
I've been very good. Very good, thanks. I have spent much of the last number of months rewriting this latest wine book that I'm working on. As I may have told you, I've taken a departure somewhat. And as opposed to another wine book about regions or varieties or appreciation or chemistry or what have you, I've kind of gone a little wild and I've written a novel about wine. And I'm not quite sure how to describe it, except to say it's essentially the intersection of Sideways and Pulp Fiction.
If
you can envision that.
Vivid images, yes.
Yeah. But it's been really great fun, and it's been a terrific learning experience. And I've been fortunate enough to pass with a couple of good editors who have challenged me repeatedly, the little so-and-sos, but all for the better, I believe.
Good. Well, when we talked to you, we looked it up, Mike and I, well, actually Mike did, looked it up before we hooked up on there. And it was, well, December 6th, Mike, did you say, of last year?
Check. December 2nd, 2021.
Okay, December 2nd. That's when you wrote. And you were talking about a novel at that time. Is this the novel?
See how long these things take?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, it's quite surprising. You know, when you're doing a nonfiction, it's very it's fairly straightforward. I mean, you've got to get all the information to put it in a enjoyable and digestible format. But when you're writing a novel, you're kind of creating a whole new world, and it involves other parts of your brain. So,
Mike, you had a question for him there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, why did you decide to rewrite it? What is it, because of the others that were checking it out or anything, or you just decided something's not going
right? It is. It's all the dirty editors, quite honestly. Well, I was smart enough to realize that since this is my first full official foray into fiction, that there were going to be things that I was not perhaps up on as much as I should be. You know, formal things like syntax and structure and showing rather than telling, storytelling rules of the road, so to speak. And they're certainly not intuitive. If you do them very well, then you get a fascinating story and a page turner, or at least you get people turning the page and interested in what evolves and what develops. And if you do them poorly, then people read a dozen pages and toss it in the pile and say, that looks like a good bit of kindling for the fireplace. So I was trying to avoid the kindling element of it and move it more into the page turner category. So that's what I say. That's what I was referring to when I said it's been a great education, because I really have. I thought I was a pretty smart guy, inflated ego and all that. I thought I was a pretty hot writer. But writing this way is a whole different ballgame. You really do have to learn what you're doing. So it's been great. I mean, it's taken three times longer than I thought it would take. But it has been a great experience, and every rewrite has, I feel, significantly strengthened the book. So I'm pleased with it. It's been a good time. And of course, I've had to do a lot of research along the way, which, primarily tasting wine, but I do the same research for all my books. So
that's the best part. Yeah. How long is it? Are you getting near the end? How long is it?
It's about, well, in a kind of standard, but kind of larger paperback format, it's about 400 pages. So
wow,
it's got some heft to it.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. I was thinking, you'd mm-hmm. going to come back with 290, 3, but boy, 400.
No.
You did some writing.
No, I did. Yes, I did. And it was a lot of fun.
You have, this is fiction, this is wine fiction mystery.
That's not inaccurate. It's not one of these wine cozy mysteries where everything takes place within the confines of a winery and we find the body floating in the fermenter, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, there are plenty of those out there, and
there are,
and quite frankly, you know, some are better quality than others.
That's true.
In terms of that old page turner element we were talking about. But this revolves around a wine focused criminal enterprise.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Yeah. Some good juice in there, too, I'll say.
Really? Where does it take place?
Well, it takes place in Sonoma.
Oh, okay.
And then the action shifts to Vegas and Miami, and it ends up in the Adirondacks.
Oh, wow.
So
you sort of jumped
over
away from wine country there quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, actually, there's a segment in Grand Cayman as well. So
wow,
it's it does jump away from wine country. So as I say, it's not inward looking. You know, it's not all about, you know, looking at footprints in the vineyard or anything. It's kind of a caper. With international affiliations. So,
very good. Is it finished and published? I mean, can we order through Amazon?
It is not published. No. Once I get this thing published, I'll be sure and get a copy to you. It's not yet published, but I'm hoping that will happen in this wonderful upcoming year of 2023.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I heard you guys mentioning will be
a much
far
better
year of 2022.
Oh, yes. Yes. We've already decided that.
Yeah.
You know, too many.
Sure.
Not good.
Yeah.
Things
onward and upward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well,
so did you guys have a good 2022?
No. Well, overall, I suppose I can say yes. I played a lot of golf. I volunteered as a ranger at a golf course, and every shift I worked, I got myself a free round of golf. So I ended up playing a lot of golf in 2022. And
sounds like it.
Yeah, it's a lot, but that's about all. We had a couple of losses in the family that struck us hard, but we're looking forward to 2023 and getting 22 behind us and advancing forward on that stuff. So
yeah, that's all.
And Mike did not have
that.
A good. Well, no, thank you. Mike did not have a good 2022 because Hurricane Ian paid him a visit, and he lived in a hotel for about 7 weeks. Yeah,
7 weeks.
Oh, my.
For the house.
Yeah.
So.
Hard time.
I hope it was a good hotel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was comfortable. It was a lot better than staying in the house, but... Yeah, needed a roof, replaced the ceilings, the walls. Pretty much the place was gutted, carpets and everything. So, 7 weeks. So it was, I was telling Ron, I think right after I got back on here, because I couldn't get online. We fared a 100 times better than what they did in Southwest, was it Fort Myers and all that?
Yeah.
They were just completely wiped out. But, at least. At least we could come home and, you know, grab stuff or anything like that afterwards. And in some ways it did a lot better than what they,
And
well, it could always be worse. I guess that's something we need to keep in mind. Whatever it is, it could always be worse. And there's someone in the world who's suffering more than we think we are. So
right.
we have to, you know, appreciate our blessings. How many people can sit around and enjoy wine and, you know, live the good life like we do? So we really are, we're pretty fortunate.
Right. And, you know, overall, you know, we, as they say, count your blessings, and we've got our fair share of them. So, but some things are tougher than others to go through. And so, you know, but we persevere and keep plodding on. You were, well, Sarah got a hold of me and said, Jim wants to come on and talk about food and wine pairings. And I said, great. And then I started to think it would be good for us to talk about champagne tonight, since it is a couple of days away from the big champagne day of the year. And so maybe discuss champagne and your suggestions and alternatives to champagne, because you know, people go, I'm going to let
some people go to pick it up and get a little sticker shock.
With, especially now, it seems like anything coming from the EU is more than it should be. You know, I mean, we're not used to this. You live in Maine, don't you?
I do.
Yes, okay.
Yes, I live on the coast of Maine.
Oh, my gosh. Before we go any further, tell me about the weather.
Well, last week was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
No, I live literally right on the coast. I actually live in a little fishing village that is primarily populated by lobster fishermen, which I know is tough duty, but, you know. And we are so close. I mean, I'm right on the water. So that really moderates some things. In other words, if they have, you know, 20 inches or so of snow 20 miles inland, here on the coast, we might typically have 4 or 5 inches.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. And if it's 5 degrees 20 miles inland, it's probably 15 or 20 where I am. So it really acts as a wonderful modifier. And then in the summer, it reverses. So if it's, you know, 95 inland, here it's going to be 80. So that, you know, being on this big body of water we call the Atlantic Ocean, with the Gulf Stream not too far away, really tends to modulate things nicely. But we did have this big storm that crossed the country last week.
Yeah, they have
landed
a name for
pretty
it.
Hard when it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah,
think
they
so.
Did. Oh yeah, they named it.
They did.
Yeah, they named big winter storms now, and I can't remember what the name of it is. I don't know. So, but yeah, they did name it.
I don't
it.
Remember the name either. Yeah. But it was quite the little wind event. It started blowing at, I'm going to say, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the evening, afternoon, although it's dark here at 6 o'clock.
Right. You'll hear.
And it blew all night and all day the next day and into the night, the following night. And we had sustained winds, that were in the 60s.
Wow.
So it was pretty wild. You know, I mean, a hurricane is 75.
Right.
So, well, we didn't have sustained winds that were in the 60s. We had gusts, even locally, as high as 68. I would say the sustained winds, though, were certainly in the 50s. I mean, it was a big wind. And it did a fair amount of damage. It knocked over a lot of trees. And, of course, where I am, if you knock trees over, you knock power lines out. So, you know, thank goodness we have a generator, because we were running on the generator for 3 days.
Wow.
as our only power source. Pretty exciting, you know.
We didn't get
as much rain as was anticipated. You know, the big fear was we were going to get this huge wind and huge rainstorm, and then it was going to drop 30 degrees overnight, as it did in much of the country. The rain stopped about 8 hours before the wind stopped. And because of that, the wind was actually able to evaporate all the water off the roadway. So by the time the temperature plummeted, the roads were dry anyway.
Well, that worked perfectly well. Yeah.
It did. Oh. It did. You'd think someone had set that up.
Yes.
It was pretty remarkable. Yeah.
Well, good to hear you survived that well. There was some places that were just really smacked with that storm that went through. Oh, you know, we got cold.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it just unbelievable cold down here for our area. Yeah, it was.
You mean you had to put a long sleeve shirt on?
When it get as cold as it, we had long johns. We had parkas, we had, flannels. I mean, we had the whole thing. I mean, when you drop down below, 50, then you have to really bundle up. And this got down to the low 30s. And so it.
I lived in Miami for about 18 years.
Oh, did you? Oh.
Back when, yes. And when I left Miami, I went from Miami to Chicago. And when I did, I didn't own a winter coat. I didn't own a pair of socks. And I think I had one long sleeve shirt. So needless to say, I wasn't fully prepared for Chicago winter.
Yeah, it's and especially coming off of the lake there. Oh, my gosh, it gets cold. I've been
sure
in Chicago for a couple of months, years and years ago, and it happened to be there in late winter, March, April. But, boy, it was still nasty in that. So, but we serve that in here. People were talking about, how cold it was and everything else. And every time you did that, you had the snowbirds, the ones that come down just in the winter saying, but up home, it's true, up home. But obviously that's why you're here. So it was still
sure.
cold for
yeah.
us. But I was
it's
just
what you're
what
used to.
That's it exactly. I just wondered what was happening, up there. Cause I remember you mentioned that you lived in Maine, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's anything above, the Georgia Florida border, is just too cold.
it's
just too cold.
It's
for
pretty
it.
Much the North Pole.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You got that right.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah.
So look, are you throwing a big, New Year's Eve party?
No, actually, no. I'm going to stay home. They talk about all. Actually, my wife and her mom lives with us, and so my wife and mom have been very, very sick for the last 2 or 3 days. They've got something. I think it's RSV, but I don't know. They did the COVID test, and they're fine, but with COVID, but they're both very, very sick, and so. We are probably not going to go anywhere and just sit here and let them recover. And that's it.
That's the wise thing, sure.
Yeah. I did have an opportunity last night after golf to enjoy some good cigars and some single malt scotch. A group invited me, and that was very pleasant.
That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that.
I can hear the sympathy in your voice.
I'm dripping with sympathy.
I can tell. That was very pleasant. Had a couple of really nice cigars and some Glenlivet, some Glenfiddich, and another one. I can't remember the name right now, but. I'm a big single malt.
Glenmorangie.
I think maybe. Yeah. So, but yeah,
it's a lot of good scotch out there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good scotch out there. So, but
that's interesting.
Go on.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say the other thing that's interesting in the whiskey world is really the resurgence of Irish whiskey.
Yes.
There was a time not too many years ago, and I mean literally 10, maybe 15 years ago, when I had visited every distillery in Ireland.
Oh,
and
really?
I think at the time there were four of them. You know, yeah, because distilleries often make more than one label.
They do.
Even here, if you go down to bourbon country, you know, you go to a place like Buffalo Trace Distillery, and they make, you know, Blanton's and Buffalo Trace and Rare Eagle and, you know, a number of whiskeys. But, Jameson in the South was the big distillery and made a number. Or there wasn't a big number then. And then, of course, Bushmills in the North. And there were a couple small ones in the center, Cooley's, and I can't remember the name of the other. And I'm kind of an Irish whiskey fan, so, you know, that was great. I loved doing that. But since then, there has been truly a renaissance of Irish whiskey, and there are probably, I'm going to say 15 or more brand new, as in 10 years or so, labels on the market, some of which are just outstanding. So
I enjoy a good Irish whiskey. I haven't had any in a while, though. I've been drinking quite a bit of wine, and even the Scots last night was a rare treat. I usually, you know, because I'm drinking wine. But no, I haven't had Irish whiskey in a while, and I enjoy it. It's it's a very good whiskey. I prefer that over Canadian whiskey. Sorry, Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I drink whiskey,
Irish whiskey is kind of it's a very smooth single malt approach. Whereas Canadian, of course, is what we call Canadian anyway. It's essentially blended.
Right.
And blending is one of those things in the whiskey world that doesn't work out quite like it does in the wine world.
Yeah,
blending,
really have to have a good
whiskey
master blender. Yeah.
Well, and it's kind of intended to sand down the rough edges. So in essence, you kind of kick the personality out of it. Whereas with blending wine, you can build the personality up by giving it something it didn't have, or adding another element or a bit of interest to it, whether it's, you know, bumping the tannins or, increasing the aromatics or whatever you're doing when you're blending wine.
Color or something. Yeah, that's true.
Sure. Yeah.
So, okay, well, we ramble whenever we talk, and I love it. But champagnes, like I said.
Well, I gave you a segue there, and you kicked it to the side when I asked you if you were going to have a party tomorrow.
Yeah, I know.
New Year's Eve. But nonetheless, I think that, people are looking – at champagne, not strictly or not only at the drink itself, but at the celebratory environment in which we enjoy champagne and sparkling wine. So no one's going to sit down and have. Yes,
one second, too. It's really sad that is what people associate champagne with. I have said over and over through the programs, champagne is not just for special occasions. You can have it with anything, and it's just but I'm sorry,
you're absolutely right. We have pigeonholed champagne into being a celebratory drink.
Yes.
Whereas
yes.
champagne is great with a whole lot of things.
Oh,
if you're a wine drinker and you want to get a little crazy, open a really nice bottle of, maybe a Blanc de Noir or something with a nice steak, nice marbled steak.
There you go.
And it's a terrific pairing. It really is. And, of course, champagne and potato chips are great. Salt really plays
I like,
so I get a big
I
bowl
like
of
champagne and peanuts.
Big bowl
yeah.
of chips. Yeah,
peanuts.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It does. It really, I think I've never done chips. I've done peanuts. Yeah.
But if you're going to, if you're going to throw that New Year's Eve party, people will then say, "Well, what kind of champagne should I get, or what kind of sparkling wine should I get, or you know, which one is the best, or how do I do this?" Or, and I've thought about this a lot because I've had a lot of people asking me the question recently. And so if you're throwing a really fun New Year's Eve party and you're inviting your friends and associates and acquaintances and comrades and whatever, I've come down to two words to describe how you should approach this from a drinks perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the two words are quantity and quantity. No. Well, that, we could put it that way, but let me change that a little bit. They are both involved in quantity, but one approach to take is to have a whole cornucopia of sparkling wines. You know, when we've talked about throwing parties or barbecues or whatever, as you recall, I always say, have more than one. Don't expect everyone's palate to be the same as yours.
The fun
is in exploring. The fun is in getting to know other approaches to winemaking, other varieties, etc. So instead of just having a bottle of something, why not get that tub and fill it with ice and have a bottle of champagne, but throw in a bottle of cava and a bottle of Cremant and a bottle of Prosecco and a bottle of Franciacorta and a bottle of Cape Classique and some Sept from Germany and some Espumante from Portugal and some Spumante from Italy and let people try. That really makes it so much more fun for your guests too. You know,
you'd be able to compare the styles of all the different ones that way too. I mean, that would be just a fascinating evening of,
it's really great fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, obviously everyone doesn't like the same thing. So, maybe get a Prosecco that is a little off dry, because I guarantee if you've got more than 10 people there, there's someone who would prefer a sweet wine.
Oh, without question.
And,
yes.
You know, and they probably don't want to say it out loud. So if you just give them a Prosecco, or even get very daring and buy a set champagne, something slightly off dry, and throw that in the mix, and then just give, you know, have a toast, reserve one bottle for the big pour at midnight. But before that, just give everyone a nice wine glass and pop the cork on these things and set them in a tub of ice and let people go around and sample and taste and decide what they like best.
And
great way to educate people, you know. Yeah, great way to educate
people. I would like to add, have yourself pads and pencils so people can take notes of what they like, and that they can follow up with another bottle for themselves at a later date.
Absolutely.
And sit there going, what was that? I like that so much, and not remember.
What was that one you served, Ron? You know,
Yeah, you know, that one, those other tall bottles.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was like really good, you know. And yeah, I know that's
right.
So
yeah. as opposed to all the other bad stuff you serve, yeah.
Right, that one was really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, little notepads
or
little pieces of paper and pencils, pens.
Absolutely, sure. And the other thing that I have found is that some people, I'm not quite sure how this works, but the bubbles in champagne can be a little aggressive for some people. They actually have trouble swallowing it.
Yeah.
And yet, if they get a softer, like a Prosecco, it's much easier for them to swallow it and enjoy it.
Yeah,
and you know, then you have someone who says, well, gee, this is a great wine. What is this? This tastes just like champagne. And you say, well, that's a cava. That's made in the same way. It's from Spain. But the beautiful thing about cava is it not only is it delicious, but compared to champagne, it's dirt cheap.
There you go.
And a lot of people like to hear that too.
And
what the heck is Cape Classique? I've never heard of this one. And then you can get on a little riff about South African wine.
South African, yeah.
You know,
there you go.
Yada yada. I mean, you can really turn it into a real fun evening just by offering. And here the quantity is it's not about, you know, overindulging, but it's about sampling and having other things available to share with your guests.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a lot of them out there, too, that you're not spending a fortune to get yourself a nice bubbly. I mean, it's, again, back to my first reference and the fact that people are afraid because of prices on champagnes. And when you start getting away from the champagne and start getting these others that are made the same way and are just as good, and you're going to drop the price, well, by half or even more on a lot of them. So.
Yeah. I mean, think about it, you know, of all the options – now, you know, the leading Italian alternative would be Franciacorta.
Right.
And that's made in the same traditional method. And it can be pretty pricey, too.
Yeah,
it's not going to be as pricey as champagne, but it's not cheap stuff. But then once you get to, you know, the Cremants, I mean, it could be made 20 miles down the road from Champagne and cost a third as much.
Or less. I've talked about the Cremant before, and I've had it, and it's a great alternative because, like you say, it's right there in the same neighborhood, only it just doesn't have Champagne on the label. It says Cremant, and so
right.
The price
is
less.
Yep. Yeah, and all of those spumantes are not pricey. Espumantes from Portugal are not pricey. And of course, there's a wonderful just sparkling wine made in the United States that, you know, is available in a wide variety of prices. But you can get some pretty excellent stuff for, you know, $20 a bottle.
Yes.
Which is kind of surprising.
And it's,
you know, whether it's
not just out of California, but New York puts out some great sparkling wines, as does Virginia.
They do.
Surprisingly. And
does New Mexico. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. That's true. which is a little quick aside story here. When I had the winery open, I thought, I'm going to ask people to bring me a wine from a different state. And I was going to accumulate every state in the nation. I had a shelf up above the cabinets that was perfect size to hold a wine bottle. And so I started to ask customers, when you come back, bring me a wine from a different state. And I eventually got one from every state in the nation up there. But the one bottle I got from New Mexico was a sparkling wine, was a champagne style. So,
yeah. Grew it, I would bet.
Actually, it was, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, grew it, makes some very nice stuff. Yeah. They are a originally a French family who moved to New Mexico sometime a generation or so ago. And they make great stuff, and you can buy it for, I don't know, $17 a bottle. I think their entry level, their basic is $12 or $14 a bottle.
Wow.
They even make a nice rosé,
I think they also, like Chenin Blanc and Chardonnay grapes, I think, go into it too, if I remember correctly. So they're still using the Chardonnay and Chenin Blanc to make their champagnes or sparkling wines down there. So, you know, you're still getting the basic same flavor profile. It's just, but very good wines, very good champagnes coming out there. And so, you know, I mean, as they are all over the country, I mean, when you start looking at different areas and all that, you can find some great sparkling wines. So it's a great thing. And also sweetness levels. I think we need to hit that because some people get a little confused on the sweetness levels of champagne. I'll let you address that.
Well, I don't know why they would get confused, since champagne that's labeled sec, which means dry, is sweet.
So. I know.
How did that happen? Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Who was the genius?
Right. Who came up with this system, huh? We say it's wet when it's dry. Yeah. So, it's kind of interesting that, you know, Brut, of course, is the driest of champagnes, or then there's Extra Brut, which, depending on who's making it, is either less or more dry. And then there's Naturel, which has no dosage at all, so it is really the driest of all. I'm just trying to look at something here, and I'm not finding it, but nonetheless.
Extra dry, which is our dry, which is not
dry. You've got
dry.
Extra dry. No, you've got extra dry, which is sweet, and you've got dry, which is sweet.
And fruity.
Yes. Now, the one thing is, to help guide you if you're shopping and you don't want, most champagne that's sold in this country is labeled Brut and is dry.
Right.
So if you are specifically looking for something that's a little sweeter, you would do well to ask your friendly wine retailer to point you to the right bottle, because otherwise you're very likely to go home with something that's very dry, even though you promised your new love interest that you would get her something incredibly sweet, just like she is. So.
Oh, he's a smooth talker. Demisec, there's another way you can go at it. Demisec is usually pretty sweet. It's like sugar in a glass. So,
And the thing to keep in mind, these names came about because years ago, originally, all champagne tended to be pretty sweet, just because of the way it was made, and the sugar was not fully fermented, even with a fermentation in the bottle. It often was not fully fermented, so champagne often had a higher residual sugar content than most wines do. And so when we got to the point of calling champagne dry or sec, it was in comparison to everything else. So as we
other champagne
mentioned earlier about, you know, what you're wearing, everything's relative. So, you know, relative to the great masses of champagne that were produced in the 1800s, Sec was pretty dry. But our taste as wine consumers en masse has changed to a much drier style. So we've kind of passed that up in the rearview mirror, that Sec being dry. And now to our palate, it's quite sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the sweetness level is interesting. Also, the grapes, whether you're having a rosé champagne or whether you're having a regular three grape blend, or whether you're having a Blanc de Blanc, which of course is all Chardonnay. And tends to be the lightest, and when it's made very well, maybe we could say the most ethereal of champagnes, as opposed to a Blanc de Noir, which is made all from black grapes, be they Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier, and tends to have much more body and fruit, and that's the kind of thing you want to be having with a piece of meat. So it's a big subject unto itself, really.
Champagne is something that I think people just sort of look at, like I mentioned before, as a party drink, a party wine, and that's about it. But like you say, there's so much involved. There's so many different things in the under the umbrella of champagnes or sparkling wines that it's
sure.
Quite fascinating what you can match it with. And we were talking just a few minutes ago, too, about, you know, potato chips and peanuts. It's
mm-hmm.
it seems odd, but it's true. It gives you that little extra balance there. You wouldn't think of sitting down with a cab or a Pinot Noir and saying, okay, let me open up the chips. But champagne works.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It, the acidity really plays nicely with the salt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice match. It really is.
Yeah. I've never had potato chips.
I've
had peanuts, but, yeah.
Oh, you've got to go with, you got to try some chips.
I will. I definitely will.
Your assignment, should you choose to accept it,
mm-hmm.
is to get yourself a nice bottle of champagne and a big bag of potato chips.
Any particular brand that is suggested?
Well, whatever your favorite. Whatever
not brand. I mean, any. I don't want flavored, do I? Or would that throw off the taste profile?
I would say not, at least not for your first foray into this particular pairing. I would probably go with the traditional. I mean, if you want to get a little sexy, you could probably go with Ridges, chip,
That might be interesting, yeah.
But I would hold off on the salt and vinegar or the barbecue or whatever
until
second or third go around at this.
Okay. I may get hooked on it too. Next time I talk to you, I just yell at you for, starting a new addiction.
Yeah. I didn't have enough bad habits. Then you had to put me on the champagne and potato chips. Yeah.
Champagne and potato chips. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We can't disappoint Sarah because she said you want to talk about food and wine pairing, so we need to hit on that lightly. Coming up.
Well, we did. We just talked about champagne and potato chips.
Champagne and potato chips. There we covered the topic. Okay, so Sarah.
There's your food and wine. We've got that covered.
That's right.
I wanted to mention one other thing about champagne, if I might take 45 seconds. I said earlier I decided that the approach to a great party was quantity and quantity.
Mm.
And the cornucopia, the offering of all these different wines, is really about a diversity. There's another approach to take, however, which is particularly appropriate if you're having a nice sit-down meal, mm-hmm. and that is to serve your sparkling wine, whichever variety it might be, from large format bottles. Because uh-huh. there's nothing that's going to wow a dinner party of six or eight people more than bringing out, a Jeroboam of champagne or a Methuselah of champagne,
yes,
you know, or even a Magnum for that matter. And here the quantity is not, it's not about diversity, it's about generosity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing. Interesting, if you bring out a big bottle to a table of people, you look at them as you bring it out and present it, and you will see everybody smiling. It just hits people in the old wow button. You know, it really does. You'll have people giggling. I mean, it's wild.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Yes. I'm a believer. But it's a great thing. I once went to a wedding, a friend of mine who was a psalm in Portland, Oregon, got married.
Oh.
And he had his bride saber a Salmanazar of champagne, which is like 12 bottles.
Yeah, it's a big
bottle. Basically in a bottle. And someone else had to kind of hold the bottle, and she had never savored before at all. And he gave her the sword and showed her how to do it. And she ran it up there and popped, got it first try. And it was
wow.
great. What a great moment that was. Yeah.
Yes.
It was terrific. And, it was only with his connections that he was able to find a bottle of that size. Particularly in champagne, but it's not that difficult. I mean, if you look around, I don't know who your wine shops are down there, Total Wine and
Total
and
Wine, ABC.
Good local individual, ABC, they're going to have more large format bottles there than you think because you don't normally look for them. But it's really just so much fun to pop. Even if you're just opening it traditionally, just to pop the cork on a really big bottle and pour for everybody. It's really great. So hence my quantity and quantity.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Oh, and you mentioned sabering. That's taking your sword and hitting the cork just right, which pops right off. Do not try that at home unless you know what you're doing. It's just a simple warning there for all of you.
It can go awry.
Definitely can. I've seen it happen before, and it's like, oh, my gosh, you chopped off the whole neck, and there was little pieces of glass and bubbly everywhere and all that stuff, and it was not a pretty sight. So, don't try to saber it or sword it or whatever you want to call it until you – get yourself a little.
So you know how to do it.
Little knowledge and know how to do it. Yeah.
But it's fairly easy to master that particular. It looks much more intimidating than it is once you've done it.
Yeah.
And in fact, in my last book, I wasn't going to plug here, but in 50 Ways to Love Wine More, the first chapter is essentially an instruction manual for sabering champagne.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
Have I not, why
explains it and with pictures involved and everything.
Wow!
So it's understanding the physics of the bottle and the structure of the bottle and so forth. And then once you know that, it's pretty easy stuff. And it looks great. I mean, it's, what's more fun than seeing someone saber a bottle of champagne and
it is
pour everyone a glass?
Yeah, it is a very showy thing to do. And it's fun. I've sabered bottles. I learned how many years ago, and I've sabered bottles. I haven't done it in so long. It's probably like riding a bike, though. You can
probably
pick
so.
It up right away. Yeah. But, it's a very showy thing to do, and it's pretty cool. People always like it.
It's kind of like presenting the large format bottle at the table. It always puts a smile on people's faces.
Yes.
It's one of the happy aspects of wine. We have a lot of great elements of wine, profound and philosophical and so forth, delicious, but that's just one of the happy aspects of wine.
I can see people smile. When you start doing champagne is something that makes people smile anyway. And so, trying the different types of champagne, that's a great idea, Jim. I like that, putting them in a bucket and letting everyone try the different ones, because people, I don't think, are aware of all the different types that are out there. I mean, might know Cava. Everybody knows Prosecco, and maybe knows Cava. But that sometimes the knowledge stops right there, and they don't realize that there's a lot of others out there at a reasonable price that are really good. And so, and you do that. Yeah. So coming up on New Year's here, we're going to have a ham dinner. Give me some wine or champagne pairings for a wine ham dinner.
If you're going to go with a champagne or a bubbly, something along those lines, I would definitely look at a Blanc de Noir for that.
Okay.
Just because it plays so nicely with the ham, you get the the fruitiness of the red berry fruit and so forth, which is a really nice offset to the ham. Whereas, as you know, if you get a Blanc de Blanc champagne, you're going to be focused primarily on apple flavors and, brioche and so forth. But if you get a Blanc de Noir, you're going to have much more of that lovely raspberry, strawberry, and you're going to have a little more body to it as well. I just think it'd be a wonderful match.
It sounds like
honestly.
It would. You're absolutely right. That sounds very good. Yeah. And wine, if I decided to go wine with the ham.
Wine, the ham is a great thing to go wining with, because you really could go either white or red.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of depending on your personality or your particular palate. I can see a really nice Grenache. Whether it's Australian, maybe a great Grenache from Australia, or even California, or a Garnacha from Spain. You get that brightness, that fruitiness, in still a lovely bodied, rich red, and that it's really so nice with the ham. Or you can go the other way, and something like a white Cote de Rhone with Marsanne and Roussan, and a little richer body, a little fuller bodied white wine.
That would be good.
Or if you want to go to Italy, look at maybe a Grichetto from Umbria.
What was that first? I'm not familiar.
A Grichetto, Grechetto, which is a lovely grape, and it's a little bolder, a little bigger. If you're not familiar with Grichetto, I highly recommend it. It's really quite nice.
I'm not familiar with it.
In your part of the world, it shouldn't be too hard to find.
Spell again, please.
GRECHETTO.
Okay. Oh, I haven't heard of that. I don't know. I haven't heard of the Greek.
Well,
now I'll have to check that out. It is a
none of us have heard of all of them, so don't,
yeah,
you know.
Really, yeah. There's so many. Full body grape, the
yes, it's full bodied. Yep, it's full bodied. It's got a lot of personality. It's got just a little minerality behind it, but it's kind of got a light dusting of citrus up front and still kind of some lychee texture to it. It's quite nice stuff. Yeah.
This sounds interesting.
I'm a fan of it.
Is
yeah.
it usually a single variety, or is it usually in a blend?
I think, now you're going to get me on this one. I think that in one DOC, it is 100%, and then in another DOC, it's allowed to be blended with something.
Mm. So,
I believe. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's, well, it's also, I mean, Grichetto, and this is probably not going to sell you on it. Grichetto is the main grape in Orvieto wines.
Oh.
Right? You remember Orvieto, where they put out that silly looking fish bottle years ago?
Yes. Yeah.
That
yeah,
kind
I remember
of thing.
That. Yeah.
But just get a straight
That's
Grichetto.
Not the grape's fault. You can't blame the grape on that. Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's like that foolish Lambrusco they sold. Rioniti on ice or whatever it was, you know, I don't remember.
Right.
But,
it's not the grape's fault.
Yeah,
you can't,
some silly thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some sort of nuttiness to it. It's really, just get a straight Grichetto. And as I say, it's from Umbria. And lovely stuff. And you're going to pay, you won't pay $20 for it.
Wow.
So, yeah. Give it a shot. And next time we talk, you can let me know how you liked it.
Definitely. It sounds exciting. I'm going to have to pick up one soon.
When you go out to get that bag of chips.
There you go. Pick up the chips.
Get a bottle of Grichetto, too.
Yeah, I can open up. Always got champagne sitting in my wine rack, so I can always, just chill one slightly and pull it out with some chips. Wow, man.
Yeah.
Gee,
yeah.
Looks like 2023 is going to be really good. starting out with great stuff.
We're all hoping.
And that's right. 50 ways to enjoy wine more. Okay, that's is that available through Amazon or through you or?
It is. Yeah, 50 ways to love wine more. And,
love wine.
It is available through Amazon, or if you have a particularly favored bookstore that you like to patronize, certainly go in there, and if they don't have it on the shelf, they can order it for you. So, yes, it's still in print and still going strong.
Okay, because you mentioned that, and I had to bring it up again for everyone out there who might want to, and myself. I'm going to have to get a copy of it. I haven't yet, and so I will. So when do you expect to be done with your novel?
Well, I'm pretty much done. I've probably got, I don't know. I probably have another couple of weeks of tying up the ends of things.
That's all.
Being the foolish perfectionist. And then I have to decide how we're going to publish this. If it's if I'm going to do a self-publishing routine, a number of people who've read it, kind of my beta readers have said, no, you should try to see if you can get this thing published. So that involves getting an agent and doing that. So I'm actually meeting with a couple of agents. And so we'll see. It would be fun to have the muscle of a big publishing house behind me, but the trade-off for that is you typically make less money, and they're very slow at getting things to market. So,
So what you weigh the difference, though. They take money, but you're going to make more money. So if you self-publish, it's going to have to be self-advertising and self-promoting. And
Right.
You know, whereas they would do it and jump in there.
Well, but the reality is that if your name isn't John Grisham, they're not going to give you a full ride anyway. You know, you still have to get out there, and you've still got to do a lot of your own publicity. You know, the publishing world has changed so much in the last 20 years that, you know, those rides are few and far between these days. It's kind of a joint process where their muscle will get you into all the sales channels.
But that's it.
Which is helpful, you know, easier than you can get yourself into all the sales channels. And I guess there's some little sliver of additional prestige, but you still have to get your rear end out there and do a lot of promotion and marketing on your own. Which is, you know, whatever.
We'll see how
it looks.
When you get to the point where you're publishing, let me know, and I'll post it on the All About Wine Facebook page and let people know.
Even a
link to it if you got any type of you know, Facebook or something to promote it, then give me all that information and we'll get it out there. Let people know.
Yeah,
Mike,
and people, of course, can always go to jimlochran.com if they want to see what else is happening. When I keep it up to date, which is hit or miss.
Mike, any questions, comments, anything for Jim?
No, not at this time. I don't have anything on social media right now. You actually had asked him about when it was going to be released, or, you know, if he was still working on it. And so that was all I was thinking of at this point. So, yeah, everything else was good. Thank you.
So by spring, we should have your book out.
Knock on wood.
Well, we will look forward to it. And anyone want to get in touch with you, again, give contact information.
Yeah, the easiest way to get in touch with me is to go to jimlochran.com and just send me a message or contact at the contact page through there. That'll come directly to me. So if you've got a question, a complaint, whatever you've got, jimlochran.com, go to the contact page, send me a message, and I will certainly respond to you.
And that's LAUGHREN, Jim Lochran.
Correct. Yes, thank you.
Yes, you know, because people start punching in wrong numbers.
Spell my name.
Yeah. It's can get confusing. So Jim,
Ron Hunt, it's not that easy, unfortunately.
All my life, though, I've had to say my name, spell my name. What's your name, Ron Hunt? What's your name? I go, Ron Hunt, H-U-N-T, because I think I'm saying Ron, huh? And so I always always have to spell it.
I tell you.
I know.
It's not one thing, it's another, huh?
It is, It's always something. So, well, Jim, thank you for joining us tonight, and have yourself a very wonderful, great, and safe new year. And I'm looking forward to the book. It sounds interesting. What's the main character's name?
Dan Keene. K-E-A-N-E.
All right. Well, is Dan going to be your new hero in your next book?
Oh, I don't know. You're thinking way ahead of me here. trying to get Dan to survive this bug.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's just like
anything's possible.
Yeah, you know, like Clive Cussler, who has his continue using the same hero over and over. So, you know, just
the Jack Reacher of the wine world.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. So then everybody starts becoming familiar with it and all that. There you go. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Jim, for taking the time tonight and talking with us.
Well, thank
about
you guys. Ron, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And
have yourself a wonderful, safe new year. And we will look forward to when the book is published. And actually, you know, we might get you back on the show and just start talking about the, you know, the book and promoting yourself, you know, through the program here. So we'll look forward to doing that.
All right. I appreciate that.
Oh, surely.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And wonderful 2023 to both of you.
Thank you very much. And you also.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Okay. Jim hung up.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's 11 minutes after 8. It always happens. Mm-hmm. He and I start talking, and we always go along.
Yeah. Good chat, though. It's a good
I always like talking to it. Yeah.
Cover a little bit of everything. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Always enjoy talking with him. Yeah. Always do.
Yep. Yep. That's, unless you have any last minute things, we'll close it up and be back next.
Have yourself a safe new year out there. And if you're in areas that are snowed or cold or stuff, just stay home. You don't have to go out. You know, like Jim and I was talking in the first show, change your new year to June the 14th. I mean, you know, it's going to be safer than this in this weather. So,
try that.
Yeah, try that.
All right. We'll be back on January the 5th, 2023, however you want to say it. Thank you all. Like Ron said, be safe and have a great new year, and, you know, be safe during all the festivities going on this weekend. So
definitely.
Want you to be good and healthy for the week.
We will see you next year.
Yeah, we'll see you next year. Let me push this button here. Are we still on? Oh, yes, we are. Okay.
We're still on.
And roll it. Oh.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwineetr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Wow.
Well,
stops. I wonder if it actually got the last part of it. I don't know. All right. Oh.